Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. We all experience different things in life, clearly, but one thing that is universal is going through a breakup. I know you've done it at least once, and I think we both can agree that sometimes breaking up is worse than having a broken leg. When you go through a breakup and feel like you don't know how you're going to get through it, how to tell your kids, how you're going to move on, today's guest, Sarah Davison, is the right person you want to talk to. She is the divorce coach. She's built her business out of her own heartbreak. She's made lemons out of lemonade. I had so many questions and Sarah was easy to talk to. I can see what makes her such a great coach. We talk about how a Tony Robbins seminar changed her life, what she recommends to her clients when they're in a rut, and how to deal with a toxic ex. She gives a lot of really good advice on that one. She gave other information on navigating all the post-breakup concerns that might come your way, including the timely issue of differing political views. Sarah also runs a breakup recovery retreat in the British countryside that sounds absolutely amazing. I could have used this in my past a couple times when I really couldn't get out of bed after a breakup. She promises to supply plenty of tissues and you get to share your stories and hopefully grow from them. So sit back. Take this all in if you've ever been going through a breakup and didn't know how to move on, or if you're currently going through one, I think you're going to find a lot of solace here and get a lot of help. So welcome to my next guest, Sarah Davison. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me on Misunderstood. So my first question is, do you pronounce it Sarah or is that just the American way? Is it Sarah?
It's Sarah, actually,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so even in America, we should say Sarah.
If you can, but you know what?
Perfect.
It's cool.
No, I like that. It's very pretty, name. So, okay, I wanted to talk to you about where you are now. You had a very intentional path to get to where you are. Will you talk to us about that?
Yeah, I mean, the journey's been incredible, to be honest, because where I am now is that I run a business which helps people all over the world to cope better with any kind of breakup, heartbreak, separation, including divorce and including toxic relationships. And it's something that's really close to my heart, having been through a really difficult divorce about 15 years ago that I didn't see coming. Mm-hmm. And it kind of snuck up and hit me like a freight train and completely changed my whole world overnight.
Right.
So to be able to take that pain from going from doing, I was a coach. I've been coaching for 15 years at that point. And yeah, I was like on top of things and I was running things. I had a global business with my ex-husband as well. We had a son who was one. And then overnight, I found out that not only was he not in love with me anymore, but he was madly in love with somebody else.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And when you find that out, there's certain things that don't help. Like she was 12 years younger than me.
Right.
She was stunningly beautiful. That never helps either. And she was pregnant within a couple of weeks of me finding out. So my whole world overnight just completely changed.
Yeah.
She was made a director of our business, which was very difficult. We had almost 200 staff and we were running offices in London and Australia. And having to go back into work and carry on running the business with that situation was really tough. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of that ugly crying on the bathroom floor, and that's something that...
We've all been there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know you've been through this as well, and it's tough when you go through those situations, especially if you don't see it coming.
Yeah.
So overnight, everything changed, and I did spend a couple of months in that really dark place, like really dark, thinking, can I go on? Is this for me? Who am I? It's humiliating as well.
Absolutely. And it, you know, the biggest thing it affects is your self-esteem. Why me? I'm not good enough. And so you really internalize. I mean, I know because I've been through it, but I can imagine in the position you were in that somebody came in and basically replaced you. A newer, shinier version, maybe because she was younger and all this stuff.
And that's it. I totally got the upgrade. When you saw her, I was like, oh, I get it. Right. Okay. Yeah. But what do I do? Because I'm absolutely devastated. I was still in love with him. I still wanted to be with him. And I think that unrequited love is a very hard situation to be in for anyone. And I think, you know, it's one of those journeys that, you know, when you're down there, you've got a choice. And this is what I realized after a couple of months of all, you know, phoning my mom at 2 a.m. crying and, you know, not being able to sleep and not being able to eat. Yeah, in some ways, I went on the divorce diet and I lost huge amounts of weight because I'd had my baby not long before. So I was still carrying some of that. So, you know, I lost that, but I wasn't eating. It wasn't healthy.
Right.
But I decided I have a choice. You know, I was a coach and I was thinking, right, I need to get some help. Who do I ask? Mm-hmm. And I quickly realized that there is so much help for, you know, if you want to stop smoking or you want to lose weight, there's loads of groups and books and sort of all that sort of support you can get. Mm-hmm. But for heartbreak, literally nothing. Nothing specific, apart from therapy, obviously, but that's slightly different to
And it's so interesting because that's the one thing that's universal, right? Yeah. Not everyone smokes, not everyone's an addict, but everyone has been through heartbreak. So you found this niche that everybody could kind of understand. So you said you had a background in being a life coach before, a business coach. What was the, you know, stuff you had to go through? What was the training to actually get credentials in this kind of breakup coaching?
Well, for me, I've always been really interested in personal development, and all the best guys, to be honest, are over here in the States. Obviously, I'm from London, England. So from a really early age, out of university, I started a business to fly motivational speakers from the US over to the UK. And I literally fell into it by mistake. My dad had been over in the States on work, and one of his business partners has said, John, come along to this Tony Robbins event. And my dad was like, oh, okay. So he went along. And when he came back to the UK, he said, Sarah, I just want to give you one last gift. You finished your education, and I know that, but I just really want you to try this. So I went to, it was years ago now, and I went to one of Tony's events. And it was small. There's only like 200 people in the audience. Now he has obviously hundreds of thousands. And it completely changed my life. It took the blinkers off. So I got into personal development. I love the fact that we can change how we feel ourselves. Because I didn't learn that at school. At school, I was told, well, you'll probably be able to go and be a teacher or maybe an accountant. And I just didn't fit into any of those boxes. None of it was exciting. I was like, oh, okay. So when I found this, and it was like, dream big and you can create your own reality. And I was thinking, but I'm not good at anything. I was pretty average at school. And, you know, what could I do? How could I have my own business? And then I started thinking about it and I thought, I love this self-help industry.
Yeah.
I'm going to fly some speakers from the States to the UK because we really had nothing back then. We had Paul McKenna, who's now really big here too, but that was about it. So one of Tony's speakers actually said to me, I want to do some stuff in the UK. I was like, okay. So I came back from a Robin seminar and said to my parents, I'm going to set up my own business and I'm going to promote these Americans. And they were like, okay. And that's what I did. And it was incredible. That was a real turning point. So I trained with them all. So I've got my NLP master practitioner. I've done my hypnosis training as well. I've done a lot of different training over the years. And I've pretty much read loads of the self-help books, if not all of them, listened to all the audio books, cassettes it was back then.
And you've been through it. I mean, the difference, I think, that a lot of people can have the credentials and go through the schooling and the training, but when you've actually been through something and you can understand what people are going through, it adds a whole another level of credibility to it and empathy, right? So you can really take it from there. What do you say would make a good coach?
Well, for me, and I have a training school now because my mission is to help people all over the world to cope better. So just me on my own, I realized quickly that was going to be a big job coaching everyone. So I started to train people to become breakup and divorce coaches. And now I think we've trained over 500 coaches in 24 different countries. So we're getting these tools out to so many people, which is, I mean, I that's my passion in life. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the most important thing when I train my coaches, I'm still really involved with that, is you've got to walk your talk. And I think, like you said, Rachel, spot on, like you've got to have been through it or have bring in your own personal experience. You might, your parents might have been divorced or there's something that you've been through. And the skills help you with any kind of life trauma, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I'm honing it to break up and divorce, but how to dial down your own stress or how to dial down anger or jealousy or just that overwhelm and heartbreak.
Yeah.
All those tools come into this. And yeah, so to be outstanding, absolutely have to walk your talk, which means that when the going gets tough and you're sitting there thinking, I'm just having a really bad day today, it's instead of going back to your old patterns and your coping mechanisms, which might be reaching for the bottle of wine or, you know, partying or just hiding in bed or eating your feelings, again, is really common. What we say is this is the time to stretch and step up and actually use the tools. So, yeah, it's walking your talk even when it's hard.
Right, right. Okay, so let's get into the details of how this works and how to make people feel better. I'm curious, do men and women deal with breakup differently? Have you noticed?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, the tools work for everybody, but I find, and I don't like to generalize because everybody is so different. And so we don't have a sort of one size fits all because That's everyone true. Is so different. It really depends, interestingly, on what your ability to cope with stress is already. So we all have friends who, when the tiniest thing happened, fall apart. Like I was in the supermarket the other day and I bumped into a friend I haven't seen for ages and she's amazing. But she was so stressed. She said, "Sarah, I'm having such a bad day." And I was like, what's happened? And she said, "My daughter's getting a flight and I didn't have any bread in to make her a sandwich for the trip to the airport. So I'm here trying to grab it." And I'm looking at her, I'm thinking, is this why you're so upset? Right. Because literally, how do you get through the day?
Right.
Whereas other people can seem to take on so much and deal with all sorts of grief and difficulties from their past and difficult kids or illness.
And it doesn't affect their
So that's a real indicator, actually, for how people are going to cope when you start putting breakup and divorce on top of that.
Right. Now, I've read that you said, and it's more than you, there's been studies that heartbreak can have an effect on you physically and emotionally, obviously. But the physical characteristics of that, what are you seeing in that? It can make you sick, right?
Yeah. I mean, it actually weirdly feels like a real physical injury.
Yeah.
Like it feels like your heart is hurting.
Yeah. And I've always said a breakup is like worse than having a broken leg. I mean, it is so painful and so hard. You know, with a broken leg, a doctor will say, here's what it's going to feel like. Here's when it's going to end. Here's when it's going to mend. And a broken heart, you just go through so many stages. But that, you know, that physical sickness is, it could really hurt people though.
Oh.
So talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, you're so right. It actually feels like this physical injury, even though it's not. And that manifests in so many different ways. It's not just going to affect you from your sleeping. It's going to stop you from concentrating. It's going to affect your ability to parent. It's going to affect your ability to show up and even do basic tasks.
Right.
So I think we've got to look at the impact on your body, because if you don't face that, then that's what you drag forward with you. And I think a lot of people, what I call stuffing, do the stuffing down of emotions. And stuffing your emotions means that you're not facing it, you're just distracting away from that. But actually, a lot of trauma is stored in the body.
Right.
So, you know, often there's the sort of tsunami of stress hormones that hits you as well. And I think that's something where, when you're used to the oxytocin and the dopamine of it all being amazing and being in love, especially if you didn't realize this was coming, and then the next thing you're hit by all these stress hormones, that's what makes you feel sort of anxious and sluggish and pretty lousy, to be honest. So I think navigating your way through that, a lot of people just curl up and say, that's it. Whereas what we need to do is actually face that and do some work. And actually, you can't think your way out of overthinking. And a lot of people try and do that. What we need to do is move our bodies. We need to change our physiology and get outside, connect with nature, start doing things that change that environment. Because as we start to move, that starts to shift how we're looking at the world. And if you can do that, and it doesn't need to be going to the gym if you're not a gym bunny, but it does need to be something that just gets you outside.
Let's face it, the holidays can be a great time. You get to see family, friends, go to parties, but it can also be really busy where you feel stressed and tired. You're running around and you don't feel your best. You're not getting the vitamins and supplements you need. That's what led me to AG1. I gave AG1 a try because I wanted a single solution that could help support my entire body and covers all my nutritional bases every day. It's amazing for immune system support and tastes great. Not only did I replace my multivitamins with AG1, but I love that every scoop also includes probiotics, prebiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. When I started drinking AG1 daily, it made me feel different. It showed a different energy level, that's for sure. More relaxed, and I could focus. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutritional supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. So if you've ever been interested in trying the product, AG1 is the supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily. And that's why I'm excited to partner with them. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/misunderstood. That's drinkag1.com/misunderstood and check it out.
Well, and to what you're saying, to your point, so many people get stuck. I know for me, I've been stuck. Like, you know, you're in a bad relationship, and we don't even need to just talk about divorce. It's just breakups in general, right? But people don't know when the end is the end. And so many people are stuck. It could be for weeks or years. Yeah. And is it the right time to leave this person? And then there's so many makeups and breakups and, you know, back and forth. And that takes a toll too. I mean, I've been in that position where I don't feel like I can parent. I can't focus on anything in front of me. It's consuming me in my head. And so that brings me to my next question about, you know, when do we know that it's time? I mean, obviously there are relationships, especially marriages, that you want to try and make it work for the sake of the kids or whatever. But they're also, you know, I meet plenty of people that are like, oh, I stayed married for the sake of the kids. I'm a product of two parents that are divorced. If my parents stayed married, that would have been the biggest disaster in my life. But I know a lot of adults think they should stay for the kids. What's your thought on that?
Well, I mean, I think that if you're staying for the kids, you've got to be very aware of what you're teaching them, of what marriage and love is.
Right.
Because we are their role models, whether we like it or not, whether we're trying to hide it or put on a great smiley
face. And they see everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they hear everything. Even when you're whispering to your friend with the bathroom door shut, they're still going to pick up on that.
Right.
Even when they're babies energetically, they pick up on how you're feeling.
Right.
So I think I know it comes from a good place saying we want to stay together for the kids. Uh-huh. But in my experience, kids growing up in that unhealthy dynamic where they're learning that marriage means potentially, you know, not sleeping in the same room or not being kind to each other, mm-hmm. or it's okay to just speak in an unfiltered way and express all the negatives about your partner, put them down, be unkind.
Right.
Is
or the cheating that goes
and the
along
cheating.
With it.
Yeah. Absolutely. The betrayal and just, oh, no, everything's fine. Because we're teaching our kids then, if you're saying, well, I know they cheated, but I'm staying anyway, that's okay to tolerate that bad behavior. So their boundaries about what is acceptable behavior.
And what love is.
And what love is.
Is wrong.
Completely skewed from maybe the ideal healthy way of looking at that kind of relationship.
Yeah, I agree. There are a lot of people, tends to be women, but I don't think it's always women, that stay for financial reasons. They feel like they've been in this relationship, they've been taken care of, they maybe are raising the kids, or maybe they're just in a financial situation where it's comfortable, but the relationship is abusive or not comfortable. But they stay because they don't have any options. They think they haven't been in the workforce for many years. How are they going to get a job? You know, how are they going to be their own person without the other one, right? Mm. What would your suggestion be for people that are stuck in those situations?
I see this all the time, Rachel. And it is really sad because sometimes it is very difficult to leave because of financial reasons, mm-hmm. or your life is going to change so much if you do that, you know, you've got to weigh up the pros and cons. And I work with clients to not jump into it just because of the emotional in that moment, I'm leaving, that's it. Mm-hmm. I always say, let's get a plan. Let's get your ducks in a row and let's work out financially, what do you need? Mm-hmm. And let's look at the future, because just jumping, I mean, there's going to be situations like in some abusive relationships where maybe it's not safe to stay. And mm-hmm. I'm not talking about those, because in that case, you need to get the right help from your, you know, your community mm-hmm. support services for domestic abuse. But if it's a relationship where you're just unhappy and it's not for you, don't rush into making those decisions, because it can be a planning process. And you don't have to, when you've got a plan, you start to feel a bit more in control. When you start to have that confidence and more certainty about your future, it becomes more tolerable to stay whilst you're doing that. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily something that you would share with your partner, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something that is for you to start thinking about. Let's look at what the future looks like. We'd never leave our house in the morning without knowing where we were going, right? Because, you wouldn't know whether you got there or not, really.
Right.
So we don't want to jump out of a marriage without knowing what that looks like. So most people will say to me, it either looks like a black hole mm-hmm. or a blank canvas. Mm. And what we have to do, and that's what I do as a coach and my coaches do, is to either shine a light into that black hole or put some color on the canvas. So it gives you a focus of where you've yet to go and what that looks like.
Every woman knows the feeling, that quick glance over your shoulder in a parking lot, the moment you grip your keys a little tighter walking home, That's exactly why She's Birdie created Birdie 3.0, a personal safety alarm designed by women for women. Just pull the pin and Birdie sounds a loud, attention-grabbing siren. We are talking as loud as a jet engine at 100 feet to help deter danger and alert people nearby. And the new Birdie 3.0 is even better. It's rechargeable, includes a built-in flashlight, and features an on and off switch, so it activates only when you want it to. No embarrassing false alarms. It's small, non-violent, travel safe, and easy to clip to your keys, bag, or backpack, so it's always within reach. It's also super cute and comes in tons of colors to match basically any outfit, so you actually want to have it on you, because everyone deserves to feel safer. Learn more and get your Birdie 3.0 today at cheesebirdie.com.
I love the holiday season, buying presents, lots of events, celebrations, but it can be hard to eat healthy when you're so busy running around with a million things to do. Thankfully, I found Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service. You can get chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals for breakfast, lunch, and dinner delivered straight to your door. You'll save time and eat nutritious meals, all while living your best life. Factor is great for everyday meals. No prep time. You can skip the grocery store line, which means you don't have to worry about making sure you have all the correct ingredients. They take care of all of that for you. And Factor is fresh, never frozen. And the meals are ready in just 2 minutes. All you have to do is heat and enjoy. With over 35 plus weekly meal choices, you will never get bored. And now Factor is offering gourmet plus options for the holidays. I love that. So you can level up and do something even more special. Premium ingredients prepared to perfection by their chefs. And if you're looking for calorie conscious options over the holidays, they've really got you covered. Dietitian approved calorie smart meals with around or less than 5,500 calories per serving. They've got something really for everyone. So head to factormeals.com/understood50 and use code understood50 to get 50% off. That's right, 50% off. That's code understood50 at factormeals.com/understood50 to get 50% off. Enjoy. And to possibly remind them of things that they like that they may have lost along the way. I mean, I know from friends that have gone through this and from me, when you're in a relationship, sometimes you forget yourself.
Yeah.
You forget what you like. You forget what you can do alone and what makes you happy. And I think that's a really good piece of advice to say to people. Okay, you have to find things that you're okay with doing alone, or who cares if no one else likes it. This is you, and this is what's going to make you happy without that other person.
And that is exactly what this work is all about. Yeah. It's about rediscovering your identity, who you are, what makes you tick, what you love, what you're passionate about, what lights you up. Now, it may not be the things that you used to do, because when I came out of my divorce, I was like, you know what? I used to love rollerblading. Mm-hmm. And in London, we have a park called Hyde Park, and there's loads of those really cool rollerbladers that kind of whiz around. I thought, well, I was never that good. I had like roller skates. So I thought, I'm going to get a pair of rollerblades. I'm going to go back. So I did that, and I got my little rucksack with my rollerblades, and I was like, off I went. I had lessons, but I got fired from the lessons on lesson four because I was so scared of breaking my wrist or something, because I had a baby at home.
Oh, right.
And I was like, how am I going to look after him? And so sometimes the things you think when you go back, I used to love that, maybe they're not going to fit into your lifestyle that many years later.
Right, of course.
So, yeah, he fired me, and we're still friends, but it was a little bit embarrassing. So.
That's hysterical. What would be your thoughts on separating from a difficult partner? Because, I mean, we've heard some celebrities like Gwyneth Paltrow talk about, you know, how they're making intentional separations. I forget the word that they use.
Conscious uncoupling.
Yes. Which seems like something that is a fantasy. I mean, if you're getting a divorce, you probably don't like the other person. But we can get into that if you want, if you think
absolutely.
That's a real thing.
Yeah.
But on the other side of that question then is, how do you deal with difficult partners? Because for the most part, you're dealing with someone difficult if you're separating.
Yeah. And I think you speak like someone who's been there, so I get it.
Yes, I have.
I mean, conscious uncoupling, if you can do it, great. Mm-hmm. I think behind the scenes of that, though, there's often a lot more pain than people see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, one person in my experience is always a bit further down the line than the other person. So, you know, if you are able to go on holiday with your ex, great. And absolutely, it's great for the kids and wonderful. But yeah, I termed the phrase aggressively severing, which is kind of the other end, which is definitely what I did. And so that's really tough, you know, when you're going through that divorcing or separating from someone that's toxic. Well, first of all, the first thing is it's not your fault. If you were in a toxic or abusive relationship, it's not your fault. Most of my clients think it is when they leave. That's the first bit. They're broken because the toxic relationship is designed to undermine you, your confidence, your self-esteem. And what we want to do is to sort of nurture that and give them the hope to rebuild that and show them how. I think when you're leaving a toxic relationship, safety has to come into that. And I think having a good support team around you of people that really understand what that is, because the coercive control, emotional abuse is very difficult to understand unless you've been in a relationship with that. It's quite hard to spot. And for people that haven't experienced, they might say, well, they were just having a bad day. You know, maybe you're exaggerating a bit. But also, you know, the triggers that might set off anxiety for you are going to be there for a while. So we need to look at those and help you to navigate those. I would say you've got to be careful about the team you build around you so that the people really do understand that as a toxic relationship. And again, planning before you leave, making sure you and the kids are going to be safe is key. But then once you're out of that, the interesting thing is physically, you're living in a different place.
Yeah.
Great. And people say, oh, well, it'll get better. No. If you're divorcing a toxic partner, post-separation abuse is something that's really misunderstood. And it quite often accelerates after you leave the partner because they're losing control over you, which is what they need to exist. And that's their oxygen. So as you pull away, they're trying to find ways to hook you back in or hoover you back in is the term. So what we want
and
to...
And maybe, sorry, just to clarify, that's not always to keep you in the relationship. It's just to have control over you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well done for clarifying that. Yeah, it's to have that control. It's really hard to let go, unless they've got somebody else, in which case they may still be happier for you to go, which is quite often the case because they don't like to be on their own. But if you get out and you're trying to move on, they're not going to want you to be happy. So divorcing a healthy partner is about coming to some kind of fair compromise at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Divorcing a toxic partner is about them trying to cause maximum suffering and pain. And it's pretty much about annihilation. Yeah. So that control from being a general everyday thing, because you're not there so much, will be targeted on kids and finances because they know that's where it's going to hit you the hardest and cause most pain. Right. So again, working with people that really understand that and the effects of the distraction techniques when you're trying to go through the legal process or the emotional control, just from a look can trigger clients. So again, we've really got to understand, you know, my tools for this I created because I needed them. And when I went through it, I was like, okay, I really need to find a way that I can manage this and dial down these emotions. I know I can control how I feel. We can all control how we react. I'm not saying it's easy, but there are things you can do to take your control back and dial down those negative emotions. But the thing with toxic partners is if you understand the game they're playing, and a lot of people don't like that term game, but whether we like it or not, we are playing a game. They're playing it and we're in it. So unless you learn the rules and master them and you're two steps ahead, you're going to be moved around that board like a pawn. So we want you to understand that. And then
and you're just going to constantly be on the defense because you just react to everything.
Yeah. So we want you to learn the rules and then be two steps ahead because then you can see what they're doing. And this is really powerful because not living with them, you're not physically living in the same place. But emotionally, what I find is most of my clients are still renting a lot of space to their ex. So you're not emotionally dissociated at all. So it's almost like they're still in that relationship. So the way to dial that down is by understanding the game and then looking at what they're doing tactically. So when something comes in like a nasty email or they let you down with pickup times for the kids or they're messing you around, you take what I've designed as a gameplay checklist, which is a list of all their behaviors. So we can look and see, okay, instead of me diving into the rabbit hole of the process of why are they doing this? This is awful. I've told them not to do that, or this is unkind. You go, right, what is the tactic? Oh, it's confusion. It's being unkind. It's lying. And you just tick the boxes so you don't get emotionally into that scenario.
Right. It's interesting that you say this because I can see this spinning in my head for what I've gone through. I've been divorced for 10 years.
Yeah.
But it's still the process of when I get an email or a text, I know now if he's had a bad day. Because I can tell that he's, you know, usually I'll get this firing of all sorts of things and I'll be like, did someone throw you down the stairs today? Like, what are you trying to take out on me? Like, it's crazy, but now I've started to see it. But it's interesting, 10 years later, you know, there have been times when I find that it affects my whole day,
yeah.
the interaction, because it throws me off. And I'm like, how could someone be so mean? How could they be such a horrible co-parent? How could they blame me for things? How could they be so in my business when, like, I haven't been with this person for 10 years, you know? And it can really affect you. Even if you think that you're above it, it could still, you know, create a ripple in all your everyday activities, unless you are, like you're saying, one step ahead, or you know the game they're playing, so you don't react. I'm very reactionary. I fire that text off within 2 seconds when it comes, and, you know, thinking that I'm winning, but then it just goes back and forth.
There's always
and
another
then,
level for them, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, but that's totally normal, Rachel. Just be reassured. That is the normal reaction to this. But when you're saying, well, the thought patterns you go into with those things, they're the rabbit holes I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So by just going, okay, what's that? What do they want? Because it's a game. So it's like, what do they want? Where do they want me to go here? What's the reaction they want from me to feed the next nasty message? So it's like, okay, how do I just pour cold water on this?
Right.
Which is you taking your power back. Uh-huh. And it's something that's really, well, seems really difficult to do with someone that's all controlling.
Right.
But you can take your power back by understanding the rules of the game.
Right.
And then going, ah, I see what you're doing. You're not as clever as you think, because I know what's coming. Your textbook, they're all textbooks. They all follow the same patterns. So it's like, okay. And then by you not going into those rabbit holes, you are winning. And that's how you take your control back and move on from
it. Well, I'm curious how you think somebody should respond to something like that. Some of my friends are like, just ignore him. Mm-hmm. Some of my friends are like, you know, oh, kill him with kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not in a stage for either one of those. I like to be confrontational anyway, so... You know, that's, I'm quick to respond. I'm not somebody who would just ghost somebody. I just can't do it. Physically cannot do it. I have a lot to say.
Yeah.
And I want to get it off my chest.
Yeah.
But killing them with kindness, when for 10 years it's been someone who has not treated me well, there's no shot I have it in me either to be like, oh, okay, you're having a bad day. I hope you're, you know, or whatever I just can't do that either.
Yeah.
So what would your suggestion be for someone like me, who I think is a lot of people I know, that like just don't know how to react the right way? What would you do?
I mean, I totally get you, because that's exactly my reaction. Mm-hmm. And being disingenuous with someone that's doing things that are just not forgivable, that are just not okay, is really difficult. However, you've got to decide what you want from this, because if you engage with them, you're giving energy to that situation, which will only come back and create more negativity and drain your energy and take that away from all the great things that you have going on in your life
That's so,
so it's like you've got to make the decision of being disingenuous to just shut it down, so all that energy and what you've got to say can go into something positive that's actually going to make a difference and maybe have a more positive result. Because one thing you can bank on, if their lips are moving, their fingers are typing, they want something from you.
Yeah.
And if it's a reaction, just to make sure that you're emotionally engaged with them still and they can still pull your strings, do you want to give your power to them and confirm to them, oh yeah, still got her on the end of a string, I know what to do.
Right.
So it's like, you know what, I'm going to play the game. And I know how hard that is, believe you me, but it's actually really rewarding when you can do it, especially when it goes against your natural thing. But it's so hard. And I really don't like the fact that we have to be disingenuous. I think
well, it's just relearning patterns, probably, right? So instead of doing those things, it's to relearn how to engage with somebody who's a narcissist or toxic, or just, you know, with somebody who you wouldn't be friends with unless you shared kids with them.
Absolutely not.
How much do you know about the family court system in America? I mean, that to me, because I've been through it on and off for a long time, I don't find it to be a very fair system. I don't think it, you know, puts kids first. I think it's, you know, very difficult. So I want to know your opinion on it. But also I want to know from you if you think it's better to try and work out things in a mediation, or if you think it's really important to go to court and fight it out.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I'm a survivor of a toxic, abusive relationship. I campaign a lot, having been dragged through the UK British family courts. I've interviewed for my podcast a lot of people that talk about these kind of things, because it's something that's very close to my heart. And like you, it makes me really angry that the system isn't as it should be. Right. You know, I'm not a legal expert. I don't give legal advice. But what I do know is that as someone that's been dragged through the courts many, many times, it is a weapon used for, you know, empathetic people or maybe victims of abuse who are coming out of toxic relationships. Mm-hmm. And because there's so many conflicts of interest, and there's not enough training or even any in some cases, all over the States is the same. Australia has the same. The UK mm-hmm. has the same. And in, you know, in a lot of these countries, we're facing a huge scandal of children being handed over to toxic exes because there's not enough education of what's going on. Right. So I think, you know, that's something that definitely needs to change.
By the way, are not concerned about the well-being of the child. They just want to hurt their former spouse.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's so much research that's been done in the UK about, you know, if a victim of abuse alleges abuse in a divorce case, mm-hmm. then this argument of alienating behaviours will be turned against them, which is when, you know, if the child doesn't want to see the other parent, then obviously that is a big issue. Yeah. And it needs to be, because, you know, it is healthier for children to have both parents in their lives. Absolutely. Sure. I'm absolutely for that. If it's safe to do so. Mm-hmm. But the checks on is it safe to do so are obviously a little bit difficult to ascertain sometimes. So this is an issue that's going on. We need more support. We need experts in domestic abuse in those cases so they can carefully protect both mm-hmm. sides if needed.
Right. Speaking about kids, what do you think is the best way for couples to discuss breaking up with their kids?
Well, if it's a healthy relationship, together if you can, mm-hmm. and agree it in advance, definitely sit down and say, okay, before we sit there and talk to the kids, let's talk about, you know, what is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Definitely don't overpromise. You know, nothing's going to change. Things are going to change. Mm-hmm. But depending on the age of the kids, you know, younger kids especially will take their lead from you.
Yeah.
So if you're going into it saying, look, yes, there's going to be some change, but look, you're going to have two bedrooms. You mm-hmm. get two Christmases. You get, you know, I always used to say to my son that Father Christmas comes twice mm-hmm. if you're divorced. So you get two lots of presents, which was great until we were in the school playground. And so I was sitting talking to one of the dads and his son came out and goes, why don't I get two Christmases like Sarah's son does? And he was like, what? Because mm-hmm. they recently divorced and he was only getting one Christmas.
Yeah.
He said, Santa comes twice and you haven't booked it in with him, Daddy.
Oh, that's funny.
I was like, oh, sorry about that. But yeah, I think, you know, kids will take their lead and there's so many positives from mm-hmm. it. And also there's research that shows that kids who've been through some kind of difficulty in their childhood, I'm not talking extreme abuse mm-hmm. or real poverty, but, you know, have been through some adversity mm-hmm. and they have a role model to show them how to cope with that, actually get through life and make better decisions because they've understood that sometimes life doesn't work out the way that we want it to.
Yeah.
And if parents can step up as role models, even if it's just one, you don't need both for this. If you've got one stable parent showing the child that actually, yeah, it is tough and not hiding those emotions, because if you do, you're teaching them to hide their emotions. So we're saying, look, yeah, mom, dad, we're upset, but look what I'm doing to cheer myself up. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I'm big on. My coach is passing on to the kids of anyone that we coach is that there are coping mechanisms. And now if you look at the rising rate in the US and the UK, all over the world, of teenage suicide, it's because their coping mechanisms tend to come back to, you know, self-harm, suicide even, drugs, you know, or bullying online, all those kind of things, rather than how to cheer yourself up, you know, internally, like, you know, putting a smile on your face. Interesting story. My son was in the playground and he had a friend, Charlie. They were playing tag and Charlie fell over and he grazed his knee and he started crying. And my son was like, come on, Charlie, let's carry on playing. Just do the thing that cheers you up. And we're driving back from school that day and he said, Mummy, I said it to him. And he looked at me and he said, well, I don't know what that is. He said, so I said, well, stand up, put your shoulders back, put a big smile on your face. And if that doesn't work, 5-star jumps, go. Aww. And he did it. And he looked at me and he said, that really works. Wow. And my son looked at me, he goes, Mummy, he didn't even know how to do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, why aren't we teaching this stuff to kids?
Yeah.
Because if they had more healthy coping mechanisms, like, you know, if you're feeling down, get outside, you know, go and connect with nature or move your body or change the questions in your head to be more empowering. Those things at school, that kids absorb these things like sponges, right?
Right.
And then when they get older, they can deal with those tough times so much better.
Right. And I love what you're saying. Your son is adorable. But what's interesting, too, is I think so many people, so many women that I know will go home, have their new home with their child and just be depressed. And that, you know, I think it's really hard for kids. You know, I think people really have to remember how much kids internalize stuff. And that when at least you can act that like this was a good thing, this is gonna be good eventually, it's really helpful to for kids to get into that place, to know like what you're talking about, that things will get better, that you can find a happy place out of it. But every time you act depressed or angry and speak negatively about your ex, I think that really takes a toll. And then later on, you know, you see that child starting to use those same words.
Absolutely.
And that's really devastating.
For
the kid, but also for yourself, you know, to hear those words that your ex called you coming from your child is really toxic. And can create all sorts of problems. I'm curious about, in this day and age, it's not only about your relationship that kids can see, but how would you deal with separating parents who are dealing with opposing political views? For example, you know, I have a friend, let's say, who has an ex-husband who is very pro-Trump. You know, didn't believe COVID existed, thought masks made everybody sick, thinks that Joe Biden should be in jail, you know, and then, you know, the mother is just more liberal and just believes, you know, that, you know, things that seem very normal, but, you know, and not even putting any of that on the child. But every time the child would come home from the ex-spouse's house, it would be, oh, mom, I'm not wearing a mask, like during COVID. Or, oh, mom, you know, Joe Biden's a criminal. Or, are you a Republican or a Democrat? You know, and this is not what a 6 or 7 year old should be saying. What would you say to parents who are not only just having problems personally with each other, but are facing different political views?
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because unfortunately, we can't control what anyone else does, what they say or their actions. So trying to change that, just don't waste your time with that.
Right.
So we've got to refocus on what can we control. And that's always the question. You know, well, if this feels like I'm out of control, let's ask ourselves, what can I control with this? Well, you can control what happens in your house and the values and your boundaries, your morals that you create in your own home. And children, especially at that young age, will learn by, you know, when I'm at one parent's, it's like this. When I'm at the other parent's, it's like this. And they'll see the, you know, that they'll learn from what they see and experience. Unfortunately, it's very difficult to combat it by going into it. So you have to kind of go around the houses. So if it's a difficult view, different views or different behaviors, it's like, in our house, this is how it works. So there's no shouting, there's no bullying, there's no being unkind.
Bedtime is at this time.
Exactly. And learning that you can't do that, but hopefully with your strong influence on them, just how you do things and the people you bring into your home and the people you surround with, they'll see as they grow up. They always find, you know, who the rock is, who the stable parent is. They'll always gravitate to that.
Right.
I think, and we can worry a lot about those things, but unfortunately, that's something that we can't control, what's going on the other side.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, I want to get like three tangible tips for people that are trying to get from heartbreak to happiness.
Okay.
What would you suggest they can do?
Yeah, good question. So first one would be, you know, I think you touched on this earlier as well about feeling stuck. And if you are feeling stuck, there's a couple of reasons why. Number one, it might be that you're telling your story over and over again. There's a lot of us, if we're honest, that did that or are doing that.
Of course,
and it's not just to our friends. It might be the hairdresser or the nail technician.
And no one wants to hear that, by the way. I know it's consuming a lot of us, but no one else cares.
No one else really does. So that is one thing. We need to stop telling that story. Still have one or two people that are constructive, that are helping you and not feeding that for you. But then let's change that narrative to what you're going to do differently and what exciting things are coming up in your life, because that shifts your focus and it still enables your friends and your support team who want to be there and listen, maybe feel they're not being a good friend if they don't ask you. It gives them a different topic to focus on, and helping you move forward is going to be more key. If you haven't got closure, this is one of the things I see all the time. People want to go back to their ex to get the closure. And they're saying, until I know why, I can't move on.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the interesting thing here is the person that hurt you can never be the person to heal you. That person is you and you alone. So we have to start looking for how we get our closure. And the closure is their lack of accountability, their lack of kindness, their lack of respect, their lack of empathy, their lack of ability to keep your heart safe is your closure. So if you have any of those negative things that have happened with them, That is the reason to say that is not acceptable behavior in my world. I won't tolerate that. I am worth more. Mm. And then focusing your energy on not getting the closure, but how you build your self-worth so you know that you deserve more.
Right.
So that would be something I would definitely suggest.
I love that.
Yeah. And again, you know, like I said, you can't think your way out of overthinking. And if you are in that stage, that also keeps you stuck. So getting outdoors, moving, coming up with something that's going to take you out of your comfort zone, mm-hmm. maybe not the rollerblading thing, but do something a bit different that's going to push you outside of your comfort zone, meet new people. Don't be afraid to do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, moving, taking deep breaths, getting outside. Self-care is something that so many people are thinking is a bad thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think self-care is selfish,
right?
But it's not. It's what we need. It's like putting your oxygen mask on the airplane before you put your kids on. When right. you first do that, people are like, oh no, I'm going to look after my child first. Then you realize, well, if you can't be there, then no one's helping your child. Yeah. So all about looking after you, taking time out, being kind, running that bath, taking those minutes out, mm-hmm. not just rushing for everything. So investing in you to rebuild your strength and your health and your mental well-being will then enable you to make some of those bigger decisions and make better decisions in the long run.
Right. A lot of what you're saying answers this. But what about these people that cannot let go, that are having a really hard time letting go of their ex? I mean, they could take baths, they can go to the gym, they can try and go out with other people, but their ex is on their mind. Mm. I've been in that position. It's really hard to let go sometimes because you remember only the good. You know,
yeah.
and you forget why you're in the position to be in the breakup. I mean, for me, my answer would be time. I mean, it's time. And then realizing, well, wait a minute, that sort of wasn't as great as I thought. Or, you know, yeah, I have the whole weekend free now, but like I can find other things. It's so for me, it was time and understanding that there are other things out there. And then later on, I'll look back and say, I don't even know how I was in love with that person.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous,
yeah.
you know? So you need the time to get away from it. But is there a more clinical answer to that?
Yeah. Well, I think you can definitely fast track that. And time is a good healer, mm-hmm. always. And I think you can look back and see those things easily. But there are things you can do to fast track that. And that's what a lot of my work is doing that personal development journey. Mm-hmm. If you come out of a relationship and you're still focusing on your ex and you're trying to move forward, it means you need to go inside and start thinking about you. Because if your focus is on your ex, it's like driving your car. If you're focusing on the rearview mirror, you're not going to go anywhere or you're going to crash.
Yeah.
What we want to do is take that focus off your ex and shift it onto you. And that might be having both hands on your head and like wrenching it around and continuously doing that.
Right.
But you know, when I work with people, we set up reminders and pattern interrupts around their home. Like on your mobile phone, what's your ringtone? Like mine is Happy by Pharrell, because when it goes off, that just reminds me, okay, what am I happy about?
Mm.
Writing a list of all the things that didn't work in your relationship is really important to take those rose-tinted glasses off, like
That's
you said.
Really important, yeah.
Yeah, because we're kind of programmed, exactly as you said, to think about all the good things, the things we're missing out on. But there's reasons why that relationship didn't work. So
right.
we've really got to face the reality rather than the fairy tale that we create in our head, especially with toxic relationships. You fall in love with someone that never really existed. Mm. It's a perception of someone to hook you in, but then the behavior never really matches up to that for long. It kind of might do for a bit to hook you back in. So again, understanding that the person maybe you fell in love with never really existed is quite tough, but that actually helps you unhook from those feelings.
Right. And don't you think it's true that most people date in patterns? I mean, they will continually date the same type of person, but just in a different body. So how would you suggest for people who are already having a hard time because they're breaking up, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do they break these patterns and date the right person?
Such a good question. I wish all my clients would ask me this. It's like we have to learn the lessons and bank them, because life has a really funny way of teaching us the same lessons over and over and
right.
over again until we go, okay, I get it. I've banked it. So it's about looking back. And that's some of the work that we do, is like looking back and saying, okay, it's not just what you want from a partner, because most of us pretty much know tall, dark, handsome, blonde, blue eyes. We know what we're attracted to physically,
mm-hmm.
and sort of the easy what we want from someone. But what do you need?
Yeah.
What you need is so important to work out. Is it someone that's emotionally intelligent, that can really get you, or someone that's got your back? You know, what is it for you that you've learned mm-hmm. that you didn't have in the last relationship? And then building up your ideal partner picture, even if you don't want to go straight into dating, it just filters out a lot of the things you don't want. And I always say, create your safety nets with dating. So have a list of up to five must not haves. So these are deal breakers, especially if, like you and me, you've been in a toxic relationship.
Like red flags or just things you don't want anymore because you've been through it?
Depending on what your history is, but if it's toxic, definitely the red flags to look out for. So maybe lies or being unkind or being rude.
Right.
Anything like that where if it came up in the moment, you might go, I can change him. I think when he gets to know me, it's going to be totally different, right? Uh-huh. He doesn't know me, but that was with them. And it wasn't with me. So with me, I think it'll be different. So this is where we get people to really look at five must not haves and commit to the fact that if those show up, their parachute is deployed and they're exiting the relationship without the, oh, maybe next time.
Right.
Or maybe he was having a bad day.
They're putting their worth first, right? That
Absolutely.
They're finally saying, you know, these are the things I said I wasn't going to go back to and I shouldn't. And also things that might not be red flags, but things that are really important to you. Like, I want to date someone who has kids because they've been through it. They get it. I like doing family stuff together.
Yeah.
That's important to me. So, you know, I should know that that is a must have. It's not a red flag. By any means, that they don't have kids or they've never been married. But I prefer men that have done that before because it shows that they like commitment, they've tried it, they know what it's about, and it might not have been with the right person, but they can figure it out again, right? So there are things like that to me, and also how you feel around somebody. Because I think so many people are putting too much of an effort on, like, do I look good? Are they attracted to me? How do they see me? How important am I to them? As opposed to, well, you know, how do they make me feel? Do I feel good about myself? Am I constantly fidgeting because I don't feel pretty enough for them?
Yeah.
Or do I feel dumb? I mean, I think it's so important to put your worth ahead
Absolutely.
Of everything.
That is a really great comment because so many people are waiting to be picked.
Yeah.
And what we need to learn is to be the person that makes that decision. It's like, well, I choose you.
Yeah.
I choose you. Now, if you don't choose me, maybe it's the little package of love that I come in or the way it's packaged up. Is a great gift, but it's not for you. It's the wrong door right now.
Right.
I'm going to come back and I'm going to try it with somebody else. It's not a reflection of your self-worth if someone doesn't want to be in that relationship with you.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people take it super personally and say, well, there's something wrong with me because they don't want to be with me. But actually, sometimes if people's wounds are greater than their ability to love.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many different types of attachment that where people are scared of intimacy, scared of commitment. Mm-hmm. You have the secure attachment, which if you like someone, you're going to go for it. You're going to get stuck into that relationship and give it your best, even though you know maybe it won't work, but you're going to give it your best.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the anxious attachment style who need a lot of reassurance. Like, do you like me? Am I okay? Are we on the right path? Is this good? They're the ones that are probably going to do the stalking on the social media and see where you are. And then you've got the avoidance. And usually due to childhood traumas, they are scared of intimacy. They are scared of that commitment.
Mm-hmm.
So again, look at the type of person you're attracting and say, is this what I want? Because if you're in a relationship with someone who can never fully commit and is not emotionally available, maybe that's not the right person for you to be with. If it makes you anxious to be with them because you don't know if it's hot and cold, then that's something that maybe you need to be aware of. So really getting that clarity on what you want from the partner. And not being afraid to assert your boundaries.
Yeah.
Asserting your boundaries can be tough, can be difficult, but it feels so good when you actually do it.
People don't do it because they're scared of being alone, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you want to be with the right person.
Yeah.
And to go back to what we were talking about before, being in the position of being the one that's saying, who am I going to pick? As opposed to, oh my God, who's going to pick me? Am I ever going to be picked? You can only be in that position through experience.
Mm-hmm.
You can only really sit in that moment when you're like, okay, I've been through it. I know what I don't like. I know how hard it is to go through heartbreak. I know what it's like to lose myself. So I think a lot of people get in a bad position where they're like, well, I'm dating somebody new and that one didn't work. And I keep repeating, you know, and trying new things. But that's what dating is. Like, you're not supposed to find the love of your life the first person you date. So I think it's also okay to know that you can date people and try and always end those in an amicable way. But like, try people on for size and see what works.
Yeah.
But like, you should realize it's okay to have been through it because it's the only way that you're going to be able to assert those boundaries and really mean them.
Yeah.
You know, because you know the experience that goes with it.
So many people date the same type.
Yeah.
And if it's not working for you, we've got to wake up and go, this isn't working for me. I need to try something different.
Yeah.
And try that and then see where that goes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really good point that we need to, you know, expand our comfort zone and just if what you're doing isn't working, try something different.
I want to hear all about your retreat because I'm kind of obsessed with the idea that you can go on a retreat. Do you get all sorts of people that are just broken? They're sobbing. They're like, I don't know what to do with myself. And they come to you and it's like 3 days of like getting them to run down the street being like, woo, like tell me all about it. I'm obsessed.
Yeah, yeah. It's a 2-day retreat. So okay. I usually do it over a weekend. And I have this beautiful country manor house in the UK in British countryside, which is absolutely stunning because the energy of the environment really helps. And the staff are super friendly. And the first day they come in and it's all me. So I do all the training on these days. And they walk in and they can see there's tissues on the table. Yeah. And they're thinking, oh, my goodness. And we get all different types of people. Sure. So this, you know, what the tools that we teach for heartbreak are for every human on the planet. It doesn't matter how old you are, what gender or your preferences, background, doesn't matter. So we get, you know, I had a pop star from LA who was in her early 20s. I had a guy in his 70s whose wife has left him when he'd retired. And then everything in between, you know. So, I've run so many of these now. You know, you always get these sort of people sitting around the table on the first day, very quiet, very closed down. There's always one that's like, I want to tell my story more than others, you know, because different people have different ways of coping with things. A lot of exes don't like the fact they're there. Sometimes you might get calls from the exes while they're there. But what we do is day one is, and I put the tissues out there because I want them to know we've got to get some of that negative stuff out before I can create space for me to give you all the good stuff.
Of course.
Yeah. So the day one in the morning, there's a bit of crying. There's a bit of facing some of those negative situations and a lot of letting go of some of those things. And I have different tools I use to sort of get it from your head onto paper and we get rid of that. Right. So we sort of destroy, we have a shredder, we shred things. And then in the afternoon, I start building up some of those positive tools. It's incredible what you can do in 2 days with these tools. It's fast tracking that transformation. It's empowering people with a toolkit that can really enable them to take their power back, change how they feel, and let them know. Most people don't know that you can control how you feel.
Yeah.
Most people live in reaction, like, well, they've done this, so I feel this. And what I say is, actually, and that's a normal reaction, but you can dial that down. And even dialing from a 10 to an 8 means you can get out of bed. Maybe you can take the kids to school. If you turn that 8 to a 5, you can probably work in quite a good way. You can probably be quite productive. And then I can show you how to dial that right down. Yeah. So again, it's not a magic wand, unfortunately. You can't get rid of all the pain. But definitely by the end of the 2 days, the transformations, people look younger, the friendships that are formed from people that are like, I would never stop and speak to you on the street.
Right, of course.
Yeah, because we've shared so much, you know, and I share and we all kind of bond. And then towards the end of the second day, we're doing a lot of that future planning for that blank canvas or that black hole. We're filling that with color and we're creating that vision board for the future. I have music pumping. People are dancing, you know, hugging. It's just amazing. So,
Oh my gosh, I think it's so fantastic that people have that as an opportunity to do that. I am not dating anybody, but if I do and then break up, I'm going to come to your retreat.
Absolutely. We'd love to have it.
Okay, last question. What are the most misunderstood, or give me one misunderstood thing about breaking up?
Well, I think people think that that's it and it's overwhelming and that's just ruined part of their life. I hear so many people saying, well, they've ruined my life now because I'm not getting the fairy tale ending that I dreamed of.
Right.
And what I say is you can absolutely go through the breakup if you deal with it. We have to grieve. It's like the second most traumatic experience we go through in life after death of a loved one. Mm-hmm. You're going to go through that grief cycle, but that's healthy to do that and healthy to come out the other side. And you can go on to be even happier, more confident, stronger than ever before and create a life you're really excited to live.
Right. And I think it's important to remember that everyone has gone through one. If they haven't been divorced, they've at least gone through a breakup with a loved one. And there's always an opportunity for a second chance, for a second chapter. And I think that should give people hope to know that it's, what, like you're saying, it's not the end. It's not the end of your story. It can be the beginning of a new one that could be even more exciting because you're a different person at this point in your life than you were before. Okay, where can people find you if they want to go to a retreat, if they want to read one of your books? Let's mention your two books. You have The Split, Breakup to Breakthrough in 30 Days or Less, which, by the way, is interesting to me because I remember, let's say a decade ago, maybe not a decade, but 7 or 8 years ago, somebody gave me during a breakup a book that said 30 Days or Less to Get Your Boyfriend Back.
Oh.
So I think it's interesting that you have a book that actually lets people not become a stalker, because that's really what that book was about, and uncoupling how to survive and thrive after breakup and divorce. So where can people get these books if they want to?
Yeah, they're on Amazon, yeah. And we have online support groups as well, which I set up because it's everything I wish that I'd had. Mm-hmm. So if you are going through a breakup and you're struggling and you just want to talk to like-minded people, they're all run by my coaches, they're online Zoom groups. You can definitely find your tribe with those. And obviously my retreats and my training school. So that's on my website, sarahdavison.com. And also my Instagram. I put loads of daily tips up there and videos. So that's Sarah Davison Divorce Coach.
Perfect. And I'm just curious, what is your relationship like with your ex now?
Do you know what? We are functionally friendly. We get on well, and my son can go between. We can be in the same room. It actually works really well now, but that's taken a lot of work to get to this point. Yeah. So I know it's not easy, but everything I learn, I always say it's a gift, you know, that going through that trauma and lots of trauma since with that relationship, actually, if you can turn that pain into your power, which I definitely have, that's what I want to show everyone. That's the mission I'm on to share, that you don't have to, where you start is not where you're going to end. So have hope, and you can, if you do the work, you can definitely get there.
Well, Sarah, thank you. I appreciate you. I appreciate your information that you've given to people today. You're very helpful, and I hope people will reach out to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Rachel.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Misunderstood.